Blog Talk Radio.
Join us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and listen to us at www.naturestalkshow.com.
Hi, Gerald. Good to have you back on Nature's Talk Show. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's nice to be back.
I know. We miss you when you're not here. I know that you're going to have your guest joining in just shortly. Kim McKeon
right.
is not here. And I know you have probably lots of news you would like to talk about. Before you do, I want to say, I was going to do this at the end, but I'll say it now. I want to thank Tom. He's my partner and owner, my co-owner of Nature's Talk Show. I want to thank Ray Oserzik and Ken Borman for all the time that they put in at the NEC. And if you haven't seen it, go to our YouTube channel and you can see the stream, the videos that Tom and the rest of the guys did. Check it out, like us on YouTube and subscribe to us, and that would be cool. So anyway, Ken, I'm going to be quiet, Gerald, and let you talk.
Okay. First off, we have some sad news to report, and that is that Jack Tobin passed away on Thursday morning, and he was a very integral part of the IBC, served as treasurer until his health started declining, and served in that capacity for almost 10 years. And he was a member of the IBC for quite a long time, and we all thought that he would get better and would then join the executive board again, but that did not pan out the way we thought it would. And so quite a few of us are heartbroken right now. The IBC convention is coming up, and June 23rd to the 26th. It is going to be, hopefully, the biggest convention the IBC has ever seen. It is the 50th anniversary, and so we're looking to have quite a fun activities. So, we also have some special guests coming in for it, like Greg Steeves. And anybody that's ever seen his Funny Money Auction, it's a blast, and we're going to try to get that going. And in addition, we have a trip to the Oklahoma Aquarium planned in conjunction with the convention. And then at the end of the convention, we will have an all-species show, auction, so that not only will you get to buy some of the really best bettas in the world at auction, you can also get some really odd aquarium fish, because most of the betta breeders I know keep things other than just bettas. Because for the most part, we tend to be aquarists. We may focus on one or two types of fish, but we also dabble with a few other fish as well. And I know personally, I breed quite a few fish, keep a lot of odd things like killifish, African cichlids, live bearers. So, and that's in addition to the bettas. So, if you're looking for some odd stuff, convention might be a good place for you, just because of that all-species auction at the end. And also, we have coming up KOAC, which is Victoria Day weekend, be the weekend of May 20th to the 22nd. And the KOAC convention is going to be in London this year. And it's going to be a lot of fun. The Betta Breeders Canada is going to have their second betta show. And we're hoping by next year, at this time for KOAC, they will actually have an international show. So, lots more classes. The breeders in Canada have been ramping up their efforts to try to fill the show categories, and last year we had quite a few entries in a number of the categories, so much so that we had to split the categories out using the new split combine rules, and it led for a pretty exciting judging. Also, a couple weeks after that, almost directly after that, the Betta Club in Mexico City is having their first IBC show, and so I will be headed there to go ahead and judge the show and train a group of new judges so that we can finally start having some Betta shows in Mexico, which we're really looking forward to. So the IBC is just growing by leaps and bounds, and it's actually an exciting time to be a part of the record growth. It looks like, in addition to Mexico actually having IBC shows, that Area 3 has had a few shows already, and they're really beginning to build up. And now we're looking at the possibility of Area 4 building up. So we are a worldwide organization with shows on every continent except, of course, Antarctica. So, I would like to go ahead and kick into our regular show now. And we talked last time about the crown tail standards. And now we're going to go ahead and take a look at the half moon standards. And then our next show will focus on the double tail standards. And that will finish out the whole standards thing. And I think from there I would like to go ahead and tackle the history of the genus Betta and how it evolved into the fish that we love today. Now, if you happen to have... Yes?
That's cool,
Hello?
Carl. Out of all the Bettas, how many... How do I say this without sounding stupid? How many different breeds of Bettas are there?
Well, if you're talking different breeds, you're talking splendens. If you're talking species, you're talking the entire genus Betta, which is like over 100 different species.
Okay.
Of which the domestic Bettas that we keep are only one species of them.
Okay.
So there's quite a wide range of variety with our domestic Bettas. So just imagine if some other species would have been used, how crazy they could look now.
I know. Alrighty, thank you. I was just curious if anyone's ever asked you that question before.
Yeah, I get asked a lot.
Okay.
And all I can say is, you know, Betta splendens is just one species out of the entire of all the species inside Betta. And
okay.
Most of them are mouth brooders, with only about a third of them being bubble nesters.
Oh, awesome.
So,
I know that Karen sent me some of her photos to use. I tell you what, these fish that you're talking about tonight are so beautiful and breathtaking.
Well, that pretty much describes all of Karen's fish, too. Because she really knows how to breed them good. And
they're
of course,
happy.
And again,
they look happy. Don't they look happy to you? Like, you know, like plants, if you love them and take care of them, they just bloom and bloom and grow and grow. Karen's fish look happy. They look happy that they're there with her.
Well, that's because Mommy takes good care of them.
I know. And I will be quiet.
I wish I had the time like she did to take care of her fish. But, you know, there's always something going on.
Yeah, she loves
them.
Yeah,
yep. They're her babies.
Yep, they sure are. They're her kids. Okay, I will let you get on with your show, and I will be quiet and listen. All right, thank you.
All righty. Okay, first I'd like to start with the history of the half moon. I don't know how many of you have ever visited Victoria Stark's website, BettySplendens.com. She has lots of good information and good history about all sorts of things in the Betta hobby. I've known Victoria for a very long time. So she has quite a bit of history with these fish. Although I was always known for the wild, she was really into the domestics. So she has compiled a huge website on that type of information. And since we're talking information, a good source also for information is the That Is For All website, which is done by Joop van Esch, and he's got a lot of good information on there as well. And he is also a long-time breeder on domestic bettas. And so, back to where we were going with this, the history of the half moon is a little bit clouded, but for the most part, she's got it tracked down pretty well. Concept behind a half moon is the fact it really needs to be 180 degree tail spread with a sharp point. So it looks like the letter D. And the end result was that today we have some really awesome fish that started back around 1982 with Peter Gottner. And the picture, Mr. G there, is a nice blue fish, but it's not a half moon yet. It had lots of branching, had excessive fins, and there were a lot of really good breeders back in the 80s and 90s that really developed these fish. And so a guy by the name of Guy Delaval goes ahead and picks up some stock from American breeders like Gottner, Jones, and Hale, who were top-of-the-line American breeders in the 1980s. And basically, what they do is they start breeding this fish. He gets joined by a few others, Chanot, Corso, and Malsimoni, and the four of them really start working on intensifying these lines, and they end up producing what they called the R39. And then later on, Malsimoni ends up with the Chem Maswell type half moon, which actually is a pretty fish. And there's a picture of that on her website as well. And the end result is they really started selective breeding these things to produce the half moon we know today. And then they started showing them back in the United States. And when they were showing them in the United States, the people in the U.S. really didn't take it. They didn't quite accept it until the winner of the IBC convention showed up on the cover of Freshwater and Marine Aquarium magazine, and that really sparked the popularity of this breed, and with that, people started going crazy for half moons. Our next slide are the general characteristics of the what we're looking for in show bettas. Now, we're supposed to write on dimension, condition, and deportment. I will cover all that in just a bit. First off, as far as size goes, we look at size in the body, size in the fins, and the overall size. Then we look at the symmetry, we look at proportion, and then we look at shape. When we look at shape, we again look at the body, fins, and the overall appearance of the fish. Dimensions: males must be minimum of 1.5 inches, females 1.25 inches. And as far as fin sizes go, dorsal needs to be at least half of the length of the body or more. Caudal fin, half the length of the body or more. Anal fin, half of the length of the body or more. Ventral should be close to the length of the anal fin. And pectoral should be large and full. Now, note, if the pectorals get too large, then we will call those dumbos, and they will go into that class. Now, as far as the Half Moon Mail goes, if we look at the slide on slide 6, it got a little bit distorted. The circle is off. That circle should be down the midline of that fish. And so what we're looking at overall is the fact we want the fish to be like an oval, with that green line going through the eye, going through the body. We want an overall straight body. Now, if you've looked at a lot of half moons, especially in the placotte version, you will see that the end of the tail around the caudal peduncle tends to curve upwards. And that's a defect that you want to try to avoid in your fish, but sometimes it's unavoidable. So we're looking for smooth, circular, and symmetrical fins with no gaps. If you see gaps in the fins and the fish does not look aesthetically pleasing overall, and we'll be down on that. The caudal should be equal to body length, and that's the goal. A lot normal or a lot just don't quite get there. We also want smooth, straight body in good proportion to the fins. I see a lot of fish whose body looks small to the fins, and that actually detracts from the quality. And of course, you get the opposite. You get fish with really big bodies and small fins that do meet the 1/2, but aesthetically, they're not pleasing as well. And so for me, a good idea is for them to be about 2/3 the length of the body, and that makes a really nice flow on the fish. Moon female, again, the same idea is that first off, they need to look like a female, so they should have an ovipositor sticking down. And if that egg spot is not there, they may be disqualified. Again, the fin should be smooth and symmetrical, and there should be overlap. So the whole idea is to have no space in between the fins. And as far as fin length goes, it should be over 1/3 body length, but you don't want to get the female's fins too long, because then they look male, and they might get disqualified for that. So the idea is to keep it between 1/3 to 1/2. If it starts getting over 1/2, it really, really detracts from the fish. So 1/3 is a good line. But I've seen some females that were over half that they were turning into males, but they were still females. They spawned, laid eggs, all that other stuff, but they looked really masculine. And that is not what you want for a female. Now, as far as the caudal considerations, first off, you need to look at the angle of the caudal spread. Again, you're wanting a perfect 180 degrees. And if you can see in this next picture, slide 8, you can see what I'm talking about with this slightly upturned tail. That peduncle is rising upward, and that is a defect that you want to try to avoid. So the angle of caudal spread is important. Straight outer edges, you really want that outer edge to be straight. You need to look at your branching patterns, because that is going to make a lot of difference once you start having the fish get older, trying to carry his fins. And again, the midline symmetry is really important. So the angle of caudal spread, you want 180 degrees, which is considered the ideal. Between 165 to 180 is considered a minor fault. Between 150 to 165 is a major fault, and less than 150 degrees is considered severe fault. Now, caudal over is not going to be faulted that terribly much unless it gets really excessive. If it gets over 195 degrees, it's going to be faulted for poor symmetry. And there are some fish out there that have a caudal spread of 240 degrees, which are what we would call crescent tails. And they can look impressive on the short-finned. but on longfin fish, it does not work well. On the next slide, slide 10, we look at the D shape. Notice the red circles are indicating the sharp line of the corner of the D there. So you want a sharp line coming up and then go into the tail. And so that's where the D shape comes from. I've had people ask me about that D shape because they couldn't get that concept down. Why would a fish tail look like a D? And if you look at that tail with the D drawing on it, it does make sense as to why it's described as a D shape. Now, the next has a couple of has a picture with the rays marked on them in different colors, and then there's a diagram showing how the rays work as far as the splits go. When you talk to people about rays on a fish, they get really confused because they are told all sorts of different things. But let's go ahead and take a look at the picture. The green there shows the primary ray. That is the main ray that comes right off the caudal peduncle. It splits in two. Now, this is what we call secondary branching. When you start looking at wild fish do not generally have branching greater than secondary. Now, with domestic bettas, they have been bred for finnage, and so they are not going to be quite wild-looking type fish. So we see the tertiary branching, where the secondary branch has branched again, and then you see that red line, where the tertiary branch has branched again, and so the end result is that we have eight rays coming off the primary ray. This is an eight-ray fish. Now, the eight-ray males are your best half-moons. I know people out there that will say the 16-ray are the best ones, but the 16-ray tend to give you over-branching, and that actually detracts from the fish depending on the severity of the branching. Now, if they're really minor rays coming off the quaternary, then it might not look so bad, but if there's any length to that next group that breaks off, then it is really going to detract from the fish. So the idea is that the caudal should have cardboard-like edges. In other words, it should be nice and stiff when the fish is erect, showing off its stuff. So, as far as the membrane goes, you want it to totally cover, have nice proportionality on it. But if you get too much membrane on there, then it will look like a rose tail. So, when you take a look at the caudals, you need to go ahead and look at the midline symmetry. Now, this picture here of the green half moon is compared to that of a double tail half moon, and so you have to look at the overall symmetry of the fish. Kind of tell it's a half moon, but you can't see the split. So when you're judging half moons, you really have to look to make sure that the lobes are split, because oftentimes on half moons the lobes aren't really split, or they have poor splits. And we will talk more about that on the next show. Now, the half moon anal fin should be trapezoidal. So it should kind of sweep a little bit forward, but you do not want it to hang below the edge of the caudal fin. And unfortunately, in a lot of fish, that happens. So you have this nice, beautiful male. He's got this nice, beautiful caudal tail. Then all of a sudden, the anal sweeps down like a half inch over that, and that is really going to be faulted because it detracts from the overall symmetry of the fish. Okay, now take a look at the dorsal fin. When you're looking at the dorsal fin, the idea is to have nice volume, and it should complement the symmetry, and it could be a variety of different shapes, but the idea is that It also sweeps a little bit forward and has no gaps between the dorsal fin and the caudal fin. Now, you see up there that dorsal fin has got some secondary branching going on, and that's good to get that spread on the dorsal. However, if you don't get that branching, you may end up with something that looks like a triangular fin, and triangular fins might not be too badly faulted on placots, on traditional placots, but comes to a half moon betta, if it's got a triangular fin, it is not going to do well at all. Now, ray extensions, and I've had arguments with people on this one here. Now, as far as the ray extensions, first off, don't confuse it with crown tail. There are quite a few strains of domestic bettas that have ray tip extensions, which can look nice, especially if they're like white tipped. And so it can add to the overall effect of the fish, and we call this comb tail or fringe tail. And yeah, the fish can look nice, but the crown tail is an entirely different creature altogether because we're looking at reduced webbing on the actual fins. So you should not make any prejudice on this or have a preference to either one. You're looking for the overall symmetry of the fish. Now, granted, the one on the right, you can see some rays that are sticking up further than others. That ruins the symmetric effect, and so that fish is going to be counted off of that. So when you start looking at breeding, you need to be careful what it is you're looking at. Now, general disqualifying faults. We're going to go over the faults in which bettas have to make sure that we're okay as to what we're looking for, then we're going to discuss some of the genetics. As far as faults go, you need to be looking at your fish when you produce them to start looking at how a judge would perceive your fish. And the idea is that whenever you're judging, you're looking for things that don't quite work. So we'll start with disqualifying faults for all classes. First off, the body size. Males, 1.5 inches or more. Females, 1.25 inches or more. Now, note, it used to be a disqualifying fault. It is now a severe fault because we have some fish that are coming in a little bit small. But as a general rule, when judging fish, if the fish overall are equal, larger fish wins. And that is mainly because as fish grow, their faults tend to grow with them. And so a young fish may have faults, but you can't see them yet because they haven't had time to develop. And so as a general rule, bigger fish wins if all else is equal. You still have to check the other faults. Now, swimming difficulty due to excess of finnage or swim bladder disorder, you always have to look. Because sometimes a fish looks perfectly good when they're swimming during judging, and then as soon as judging's over, the fish lays on its side. And that indicates some sort of disorder, usually. Class errors, fish entered in the wrong class. Non-splendens type, a wild betta put in, not labeled. Color form of variation, not labeled. Wrong sex for class, wrong species for class. Hybrids and non-splendens classes. Now, hybrids do not belong in the wild class, but I've also seen judges who hybrids were shown in the variation class disqualify them because they were hybrids. Well, unfortunately, the vast majority of the bettas that you see out there are hybrids anyway. A number of these different alleles came from wild fish that were bred into our domestic stocks. And so, technically, all betta splendens that are show bettas are hybrids. the egg spot on a male, first off, if a male has an egg spot, it probably isn't the male. So therefore, it's wrong sex. And if the female doesn't have an egg spot, well, the reverse is likely. Could very well be a male that hasn't developed his finnage yet. So, moving on, female with excessive male finnage is going to be disqualified. Malformed body, especially in double tails. Now, one of the things when you start looking at these fish is not only looking at it from the side, but looking at it from the top side. A lot of time, double tail faults will not be seen unless you're looking directly on top of them. And then you can see the spinal kinks that they oftentimes have. Missing external anatomical part, like an eye, gill cover, or fin. You'd be surprised the number of times some fish pretty close to winning, and then one of the judges looks at the fish from the other side and discovers it's missing an eye. So that kind of disqualifies it. Or sometimes they'll be judging and not miss that it's missing one of its tails, like one of the ventral tails. That can happen. Or sometimes you get really weird stuff. You get a betta coming with three or four ventral fins, which really looks weird. Extreme scale faults, excessive irregular scale pattern, multiple misaligned scales. You get this a lot with your X-factor fish. Any signs of disease or illness, you really need to be careful about that, because bettas are prone to velvet, especially in soft water. So that's one of the reasons why a number of IBC breeders use salt in their water when they care the fish. And you can request that salt be put in your water at the show to help fight velvet. Blindness. Now, again, bettas should not be blind, but you have a couple of lines that throw blind fish, like opaques and the dragon scale. Now, with the opaques and dragon scales, what happens is that there's guanine deposits in the skin. And as the guanine deposits grow, as the fish age, they eventually cover the eye, making them where they're blind. And albinos typically have poor eyesight. There are a few albinos out there. So if they don't see something, they may be disqualified. Egg bound. This is a condition females get when they're not bred and the eggs actually clog up and cannot be removed. And that causes them to look like they have cleavage on the underside. The other is the shy or fearful behavior. Remember that bettas are supposed to be aggressive. They should be alert. And if you've trained them properly, then they will display or flare whenever they're being judged. So if the fish doesn't ever come off the bottom of the container, it really can't be judged. And so the judge will try a lot of different things to try to get them to react. And if they don't react, they will not win at all. They will be disqualified, or they may just be not considered at all. Now, one of the odd things that I have seen was a judge put two little dots on his finger and put it right up to the betta, and the betta attacked it. And I looked at him and said, "What's that about?" And he just looked and said, "Oh, well, he thinks he saw another betta." And with the two dots on the finger, they see the dots and think of it as a face, and they react to it. So that works. Any fish that has been artificially enhanced. Now, we're not talking steroids here, but we're talking like, for example, external dyeing, which could be visible. Anybody that has trimmed a fish, these things are not acceptable. And over in Area 6, they do a lot of fish grooming, in which they will actually remove spines, they will trim the fins, and sometimes it can be hard to tell, but when it starts growing out, it makes it easy to tell. Okay, head faults. First off, disfigurement of lips. It could be anything from it bit something wrong and lost part of the lip, or it could have a fungal infection that lost it. Small bump or small groove or any other slight deformity is going to be minor. Large bump, large groove, or other deformity, major fault. Head tilted, usually upward, out of alignment with the body is a severe fault. Now, we have two head types. One we consider the normal, the other we can call a spoon head. And placots seem to have a lot of spoon heads. It's a trait I find actually desirable because I think that makes them look like pugs. But the main judges do not like that type of head, so it gets faulted. Okay, body faults. First off, the body should be stout or slightly fat. And if it is, you know, that's a slight fault. Double tail body too short or stout, slight fault. Double tails often are short, and that's because they have some spinal curvatures. Body moderately too small for the finnage, minor fault. Body does not show the ideal shape, minor abnormality, minor fault. Body has one or two misaligned scales, minor fault. Body has several misaligned scales, major fault. Body is fat or skinny, so better looking too skinny or too fat, major fault. Gill covers protrude outward when closed, major fault. Oftentimes that is a sign of ammonia damage. Body shows slight sway back or hump, major fault. Not a DQ yet. And there are quite a few bettas that are swayed back or hump back. Double tail caudal peduncle bump or bend very noticeable, that is in double tails. And body shows excessive sway back or hump back, severe fault. Now looking at finnage. First off, general. Projected rays on all fins, but not even. This is where a lot of crown tails get dinged. One curled fin ray, minor fault. You see this with crown tails. Projected rays only on some fins, minor fault. Outline of non-paired fins presents an oval rather than circular shape, minor fault. Does not apply to placots or females. Gaps between the three unpaired fins, no overlapping, major fault. Fins too small for the body, major fault. Curled fin rays, more than one on the body, major fault. Fins not similar, some broad, some narrow, major fault. Outline of non-paired fins present a considerably non-symmetric shape, such as square, rectangular, irregular shape. And ventral fins crossed. That happens a lot, especially on your large placots. Thin ventrals, slight fault. Extra long ventrals, except in placots, slight fault. Noticeably short ventrals, minor fault. Curled ventrals, minor fault. Stubby ventrals, major fault. Anal fin, long, droops below the bottom edge of the caudal. So long anals, minor fault. A few front rays curled forward, minor fault. Now we said curved, curled, not pointed. There's a difference there. If they're pointed forward, it kind of gives it a skyhawk appearance. And if they're curled, that is a fault because the fin is folding. Front rays have severe forward curling at the front, major fault. Triangular shape, which we talked about earlier, is a severe fault. dorsal fin, a few short rays on the front of the dorsal, slight fault, dorsal somewhat small in relation to the anal and caudal, minor fault, single-tailed dorsal, slightly narrow, minor fault, double-tailed dorsal, slightly more narrow than the anal, minor fault, double-tailed, single-tailed dorsal, no more than three stubby rays at the front edge, minor fault. Double-tailed dorsal is more than three stubby rays at the front end, major fault. Single-tailed dorsal, noticeably narrow, major fault. Double-tailed dorsal, much more narrow than the anal, major fault. Dorsal, very small in relation to the anal and caudal, major fault. Single-tailed dorsal has more than three stubby rays, severe fault. Now, when we take a look at these bettas, there should only be two spines in the front of the fin. If there's three or more, then that actually creates a problem. You need to try to breed that out. Ventral fins, crossed ventrals, again, slight fault, thin ventrals.
Gerald?
Hello? Yes.
Gerald, Dave's with you now.
What?
You have someone on the phone. Jamie?
It's me.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay, there she is.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, so back to where we were, the ventral fins, the crossed fin, same thing as we mentioned earlier. Now, dorsal fin again, the few short rays, slight fault, but when you start getting further down, you start having three or more, that really becomes a problem. Dorsal somewhat small in relation to the anal and caudal, minor. Single-tailed dorsal slightly narrow, minor. Double-tailed dorsal slightly, you get the whole idea. So, going to the next caudal fin, this is what we want to talk about since we're talking about half moons. Now, caudal edges need to be straight, but slightly rounded at the corners will be a slight fault. Caudal asymmetric, droops below the midline. That means that it has some veil tail in it. First caudal edge ray short. Again, that's minor fault, but the idea, they really should be as long as the rest so you get that nice D appearance. Caudal slightly small, not proportional to the dorsal anor, minor fault. Caudal edge is not straight, slightly curved back from the head, minor fault. Less than secondary branching, four tips from the primary ray in females, or tertiary branching, less than eight tips from the primary ray in males, minor fault. Now, like we mentioned earlier, you can get 180-degree spread with different configurations of rays, but the eight ray is what we are judging on. So the eight ray model is considered ideal because it gets you the best spread. Now, you could do it with four rays with some stretching of the fins and some exercising of the fish, but in a half moon long fin, that is going to look a little bit bizarre, but it can be done. Less than 180 degrees between caudal ray edges, but more than 165 degrees is a minor fault. And caudal asymmetric drops 75% or more below the midline, major fault, because we're going back to veil tail there. So caudal ray, very small, not proportional to the dorsal and anal, major fault. And we'll skip over the double tail. Less than primary branching in females. And you get the idea. Okay, let's go to the next slide on 25. Condition faults. This is what we're looking at, and as far as all classes, single small defect on any fin, minor fault, slightly frayed fin tip, minor, multiple small defects or a single extensive defect, major, multiple moderate defects, severe, broken rays on any fin, severe, and I've seen a lot of really, really nice half moons get nailed on that and not win because of that. Body scarred or missing scales, severe fault. Now, deportment. We talked some about deportment earlier. First off, during judging, Betty needs to be on full display and needs to be aggressive, but not necessarily violent, with response to an intruder. Now, if it doesn't do that, it's going to be faulted, but the idea is that the better should be able to hold his own during the judging, and if he only fluffs up whenever he's responding to another fish, that could be a fault. Fins should be erect, but gills only occasionally flared or exhibits only motion towards intruder, minor fault. Fins occasionally erect, gills rarely flared and not responsive to intruder, major fault. No display or unresponsive to intruder, severe fault. Now, again, when we start looking at judging these bettas, we are going to be going based on how they respond to males, and if they do not respond to males, then we'll give them a chance to look at females, because sometimes, you know, the males are not really caring about other males. They're more interested in breeding, so we'll just go ahead and pair them up with a female, see what they do, and then take it from there. Okay, Jamie, you ready to go?
Sure.
Okay.
All right, so...
Half Moon Genetics.
Half Moon Genetics. So Half Moon is polygenic, which means that it has multiple genes that contribute to the phenotype. And so, of course, the phenotype is what the fish looks like. So we have genes for straight rays. We have the genes that control the branching. We have the genes that actually control the amount of webbing between the rays, and then we have the genes that control the tail spread. So you have all these genes contributing to the half moon fish. And if any of those genes are, you know, not quite expressed fully, then you have a fish that will have faults. And so the rays, of course, can split any number of ways, but eight rays are the best half moons. Those are what we're looking for, that, like Gerald just said. So if you're looking to make better half moons or improve your lines, you know, you can do some crossing. If you cross an HMPK with a half moon, so of course this is, you know, your short fin half moon with a regular, or your short fin placot with a regular half moon, you're basically going to have these weird, we call them tweeners. And so it's not quite a nice big poofy half moon. It's not a short fin placot. Generally, you're going to have really disproportionately long anal fin and then a short tail. And they just kind of, you can usually tell them right off. And you're just like, what is this mess? Now, sometimes you can cross them back to a half moon and continually cross them back to half moons and you'll get your form back. But it's easier to just not mess with it in the first place. You can cross double tails to half moons. And a lot of people actually do that as an outcross to get wider dorsal fins on their half moons. But you have to know what kind of double tail that you're actually using to cross. There's half moon double tails and there's veil tail double tails. And if you are using veil tail double tails unknowingly, then you're going to totally mess up your HMs. You might get decent dorsal fins, but the tails are going to be all kinds of out of the way. And you'll basically have to start over. And we don't want to have to start over. So then you have your X-factor fish and your half moons. And we've discussed X-factor a little bit previously. So these are going to be your rose tail fish. And in the short term, you know, it might work pretty well. You can cross them in. You might get wider tails. You might get better branching. But then you pretty much want to immediately outcross those fish again, because if you cross them back onto X-factor fish, you're going to have a buildup of genetic issues. You're going to have scale row deficiencies. You're going to have, you could have feather tails. And so in the long term, if you're breeding four half moons and not four rose tails, that's going to be an issue. If you breed an OHM or an over half moon, so this is a fish with a bigger than 180 degree spread, a lot of rose tails will fall into this category, you can get excessive branching. Remember, we really only want eight rays. If you have more than that, you're going to have trouble with, well, for one, the fins are too heavy, so your fish don't move around a lot. And then we also have you know, you can have issues with, like I said, the scale deformities and things like that. And then if you cross a true rose tail with a half moon, it sounds fantastic. It's like, woohoo, I'm going to get nice big fluffy fins with nice branching. Again, I mean, you can do it for a generation, but I wouldn't do it more than that because, again, you get the excessive branching and you can end up with some genetic issues down the line. So basically, if you have good half moons to begin with, just stick with your good half moons and don't try to, like, improve on them unless you're using more half moons to do it, unless you really know what you're doing. So, or unless you're ready to do almost immediate outcrosses to fix any faults that might come up. So, yeah, but it's pretty cool. And you get some really neat things if you're careful with your crosses.
And as far as your crosses go, you can look at the overall health of your half moons and determine whether or not you really need to be doing outcrosses. Now, there are some people that just like to toss in the half-moon placot saying, okay, I'm going to build stronger rays, and sometimes it works out fine. But let's not forget that they are a different type of fish, so their form is a little bit different. And so you may have those placotty-looking forms creep back into your lines, which could result in some pretty weird-looking fish. Now, I've had times where I've bred half moon to half moon and get a small percentage of placots out of that line. And that's because I could tell that someone had played with that and put some placot in it. And since long fin is dominant to short fin, your placots don't show up necessarily until you've done a few crosses, and then all of a sudden they start popping up again. Now, realistically, they should pop up in that second cross, but they don't always do that. And again, back to the tweeners, tweeners is not necessarily all fins either. I've had a number of fish that I'd crossed that they would have and tweeners are real good for having really long anal fins and short other fins. So they look really screwed up. But anytime that you cross these lines in, remember that the long fin is dominant to short fin, but if you cross a half moon to a half moon placot, don't expect them to look like half moons coming out. They might, or they may look like something really screwed up, like a tweener. So those are things to look at. Now, the other thing is the X-factor fish. That's a little bit wide open there because X-factor just refers to excessive branching. And as Jamie mentioned, the rose tail is one of those things that are noted for being X-factor, but they're not the only one. The biggest problem with X-factor fish is that they tend to lead to messed up scales. And so when you start crossing these half moons, and if you start seeing messed up scales, and you'll see that a lot on your dragon scale half moons.
Mm-hmm.
Your dragon scale half moons will have a lot of screwed up scales, which, remember, those will be faulted. And you may have the best looking fish out there, but if his scales are messed up, he's going to be severely faulted and probably won't win. So just some things to consider when you start looking at this excessive branching, trying to build that super tail. Look at the other faults that are being deposited on your fish. Now, like we mentioned, the 8 ray is considered one of the best things. And the funny thing is, you know, when we start looking at genetics, you get this idea of the Punnett square that I breed half moon to half moon and all my fish are coming out half moon. And that's not exactly how it works. Theoretically, it should work that way, but because the half moon trait is polygenic, you've got all sorts of different alleles in play, and some of them are condition faults. If you don't exercise your fish as they're growing up, they're not going to spread their tails, and they may never get to half moon. But on the flip side, we've seen fish, like Kayla raised a bunch of red Cambodian crown tails, and we never thought that they were Half Moon until she started showing them in the show, and her fish just actually, I guess, started liking showing because she popped that tail out. And when she popped the tail out, the judge was like, oh, my God, that's a Half Moon. We had never seen her pop that Half Moon out until she was flaring against that other female for best of show. And when she did, that's when she really strutted her stuff and showed that she was Half Moon. And as it turned out, the males actually were capable of it, too. So, yeah, you got to exercise your fish. And we mentioned very early on about Karen's fish, how Karen has happy fish. Or maybe we could say happy bettas come from California.
Right? Like the happy cows.
Yeah. But that's because Karen gives them so much care. And so it's really hard to beat her fish in competition because of the amount of care she gives them.
Mm-hmm.
Those are her babies, and she really works them good. And what can I say? You know her fish when they come to show.
Oh, absolutely. I had some of Karen's fish when I first got started, and they were fantastic fish. I miss them every day.
Yep. My fish are lucky if they see me every day.
Mine see me every day. Just not very often. Like, here's your food.
Yeah.
Okay, got to go do something else.
That's the way it is whenever you have to work and do things. It's hard to find time for everything, but, you know, bettas are one of those fish that are demanding fish, and they do require a certain amount of care, and if they don't get it, they suffer. Whereas other fish, you can give them a little bit of abuse, they're okay, but bettas don't take abuse well when they're growing up.
Nope, that's true.
So, yeah, when it comes to if you want to show, you have to really take the time to grow. So, yeah. Okay, so, you have anything you'd like to add to that, Jamie?
I only really got to skim the PowerPoint, but it looked like everything was covered. It looked like pretty awesome.
Yeah, I didn't have a test in there for you because when we had discussed it, I knew how busy you were out at the barn and everything, so.
That's okay. I'll just brush up for next time.
Yep. And then when you make it to the next show, then we can go ahead and quiz you in person.
Awesome.
Yep. Okay, so with that, it looks like we are about ready to close out another episode of Betta Time. And next month, Jamie and I will be discussing the double tail standards.
Cool.
And then after that, the show after that, we will be going over the evolution of the genus Betta. So we'll be looking at some really cool stuff there.
Yay! That's exciting.
And that might actually be a multi-part show, too, because we have so many things to cover, and there's only so much information we can cover in about an hour's time. So, yeah, I would suspect that could be a multi-episode show. In fact, coming out in the next flare will be an article which is going to be based on the evolution of the genus Betta.
Oh, cool.
As far as that goes, that was back when I was in college. My research in zoology was on the evolution of the genus Betta. And I had papers that I published in 1986 and 88 on that particular topic. Okay, so with that, I'd like to close out another episode of Betta Time. I'd like to thank Jamie for joining me tonight. And one day we'll track down Ken, see where he was. So, Mary, you ready to close it off? Oops. Yeah. Okay. I know that she muted her stuff because she had some stuff to take care of, so.
Oh, yeah. She probably can't hear us.
No. That's what I was just thinking. She can't hear us because she is busy with some other things. So, yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Hope you got something out of this tonight, and Jamie and I will sign off and see you next show. Okay, I got her attention now.
Okay, Gerald. Sorry. Oh, I see. She dropped. Her call dropped. Were you guys done talking?
Yeah, we are finished.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to the show and being here. And I, Gerald, when do you want to do the next one? Do you know?
Better double check because I've got a busy month coming up. This is April. We're now in May. Should be
okay.
May 7th.
Oh, that's fine. Okay, May 7th?
Yep.
Awesome. Okay, then. Well, I want to thank you and Jamie for being here tonight. I appreciate it. I love the Betta shows. I love all of our shows. I want to remind everybody that we just got through with the NEC convention, our first live convention. So please go check out our YouTube channel and like us and follow us on YouTube. Don't forget our Facebook page. We are going to be planning more conventions, and in the meantime, we're looking for sponsors. So get a hold of Tom or I at naturestalkshow.com. We'll be happy to discuss that with you. And, Gerald, we will see you next month. We will see everybody here on Nature's Talk Show on Monday with Ken Borman and Kim McKeon. Thank you, everyone, for being here this evening with us, and we will chat with you all later. Take care.
Bye. Good night.
Join us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and listen to us at www.naturestalkshow.com.